Pase, pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Friday, May 24th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins. As always, how are you doing today, Dwayne?
I'm good. Kevin, before we get into the soccer conversation, I do have a sincere question to any of our listeners from Milwaukee and the area around Milwaukee that are Bucks fans.
The Green Bay Wisconsin, the Green Bay Voyagers fans too?
Yeah, I actually do know that we do have a listener that is a Bucks fan, so there's at least one out there. Why would anyone fear a deer? Have you ever seen a deer in the wild? They're skittish as hell. They're going to run the other way. And especially if there's a damn dinosaur coming at them.
Especially if there's a headlight. Because if there's a headlight, they're going to look like deer in a headlight, which means they have no clue. And I guess that's how they felt in the fourth quarter yesterday. But this ain't a basketball show. This is soccer today. It ain't b-ball today, is it? No, because
the Saturday though. Yeah, don't bother me. 8-10 Thursday on Saturday, okay?
Yeah, no, exactly. Tomorrow, full disclosure, if you following my social media, tomorrow's a big day for me. It's my last day of a young man's life, I could say. It's bachelor party time, and we're gonna have to find a place that has a TV. But here, full disclosure, there was more atmosphere in restaurants last night in Montreal for a basketball game than I've seen for hockey games over the last few years. So that tells you a lot in Montreal.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, the Raptors and the Blue Jays fandom outside of Toronto, when you compare what the rest of the country often says about the city that I live in. But I'll leave that well enough alone for another kind of podcast.
Yeah, no, and you know, it bodes well that we started the show bannering about Canada and how the entire country is behind the Raptors. Well, Canada is our subject today. We're going to talk about Canadian soccer most of the show. This is a free preview of the Two Solitude Soccer podcast that you can get for $2 a month, four shows a month at least, 50 cents a show on patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. We'll talk about the Canadian Men's National Team Gold Cup roster. The 40-man roster was announced earlier this week, and we'll give you our 23-man roster out of those 40. We'll look at the games this weekend in the Canadian Premier League and Major League Soccer. And as well, Dwayne, there's a big announcement that was made yesterday. Didn't get a lot of traction, but I think is really important. It has to do with money and with Canada. But it's a subject we've been talking about for a few months here, Dwayne. And you're not aware that I'm going to bring this up, but I think it's important. We brought it up when it's the Vancouver Whitecaps and the Kieran McCormack situation with the 2008 Whitecap situation. Well, right now in LA, in LAFC, it's soccer related and it's not. Nine women have come forward and accused Tony Robbins, one of the owners of LAFC, of sexual misconduct. We'll keep an eye to see where it goes, but I think it's important to mention. And Tony Robbins now allegedly accused of sexual misconduct, harassment with nine different women. And he is one of the owners of the LAFC Celebrity Ownership Group. And you know, Dwayne, I have to say, when they announced the Celebrity Ownership Group a few years ago, I was like, one of those people. Eventually, it's going to happen that out of this group, they're going to come to some controversy. Took 2 years.
If I was a fan of his movies too, it's kind of disappointing to hear that. But
Tony Robbins, no, you don't. He's the motivational speaker. You know
the motivational speaker. Yeah. I thought it was Tim Robbins. Yeah, got it. Yeah,
Tim Robbins, The Shawshank Redemption. That's good. Good movies, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Tony.
Okay, yeah, that's not dissociated with that. Tony, I heard Tim. So there you go. That's fair enough. Look, yeah. It's good that this stuff is being spoken about and this is out in the open. Obviously, the caveat to any of these conversations is the due process has to take place and everyone is getting innocent until proven guilty, right? We shouldn't just smear across and assume guilt. But nonetheless, often we find that in the past, there has been a little bit too much benefit of the doubt given to those who have been found guilty of these types of offenses, let alone been accused. And, you know, so we'll let that play out. But as I said, book. As a sports fan, I think you have to be prepared for the possibility that you may have chosen to inadvertently cheer for bad people or cheer for teams that are owned by bad people. And how I struggle with ownership and people that I don't like that are involved in teams that I cheer for, obviously, on the soccer side. Everyone knows who I support in England. I'm not going to give that up, despite the fact that there are questions about their ownership there, for sure. I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan. I've been since I was a little boy. One of the first teams I have. I mean, there's questions about a lot of people associated with that team over the years, right? Yeah. But I maintain it because what are you going to do? It's emotional. It's an emotional connection you have to something. So I think that it's possible, just as it's possible to cheer for a team while at the same time remaining objective and having a podcast about them and not being like a complete blind fanboy when you're talking about them. It's possible to approach these kind of situations, which are much more serious, obviously, in the same way. You shouldn't just default to he's innocent because he wears Mike's laundry. No, you've got to be objective about it, and I think you can come to grips with that if you do that. I mean, look. And a very, very serious point as well is the Cristiano Ronaldo stuff. We have to struggle with that all the time right now when we're talking about him and his talent on the field, which is undeniable, but we also have this huge cloud hanging over him right now in regards to the rape allegations in the United States. So, yeah, unfortunately, sports used to be protected from this in the sports world. It was our distraction, but we can't allow ourselves to do that anymore because when you look at the victims of these things across the board and you look at some very serious cases like Penn State, USA Gymnastics, things like that, you can't ignore it because ignoring it and getting caught up in the laundry, getting caught up in that cheering partisanship, that's what allows those very serious things to happen. And we've got to attack this thing at the nub for all aspects of it. We've got to give them a full investigation. We've got to give them our full attention and not just assume like many fans do that just because your laundry is the laundry being attacked that particular day, attacked in your mind, that obviously the person making that accusation is making it up for attention or whatever, which is a ridiculous thing to say.
It is. Let's move to soccer talk proper. We're not going to talk about Canada here for the next 20 minutes or so because, well, good news was announced yesterday or the day before. It might have been the day before, but anyways, in the last 2 days since our last show, the government of Canada has announced investment in soccer before the 2026 FIFA World Cup into 2020. $4.3 million to Canada Soccer from now into 2020 in preparation for the 2026 FIFA World Cup. So $4 million, there's going to be a bit of patching here and there, but it's not enough money to have like renovations or stuff like that for stadiums. Well, what $4.3 million does, it gives you money for the behind the scene, for the infrastructure, for the people that you hired that will lay the groundwork for the 2026 World Cup in Canada. People in marketing, people in offices that will sell tickets, that will be able to create networking, partnership, have look. So I think it's a very, very good start, $4.3 million from the government of Canada to Canada Soccer into 2020 to prepare for the 2026 World Cup. And you would think there's going to be more funds after 2020 as well, but this is a good start at least.
Yeah, probably completely coincidental that it's an election year federally, maybe, but nonetheless, 4.6 is kind of a drop in the bucket in a federal budget, but it does show other things committed at different levels for this tournament, which does seem forever from now, but really is going to come onto us very quickly. If you look at the history of all these things, I can still remember the day that Vancouver was named, the 2010 Olympics, and thinking at the time, oh, that'll never happen, and now it's like history, right? So it's, or the 2015 World Cup for that matter, it seems like that was always a million miles away and it happened very quickly. So the fact that the preparation, there's stuff and there's moving parts already is a good indication. I don't think anyone doubts that the 10 games that are held in this country, and I secretly cross my fingers that they might yet find ways to increase the share by Mexico and Canada. I think that would be a fair thing to do. But
that's not going to happen.
But even if it,
sorry,
it's possible that it could happen, but because it is FIFA that ultimately makes the decision at the end. But nonetheless, even if it is just 10, I'm sure that they'll go off without a hitch. This is a country that has hosted multiple big events successfully over the years. There's no reason to think they can't host 10 soccer games in, you know, a summer in 2026. So we're excited to see that. As you say, this is not going to go into the pockets of big business that already exists out there to expand stadiums and things like that. That will be probably done on temporary means at the time, you know, closer to those games.
Yeah, 4 years really out. I would think 4 years out, you'll see there's already plans for the Olympic stadiums to be modified a bit for 2026 here in Montreal. This is going to be the same in BMO Field, too. Toronto's going to take advantage of, well, okay, we're 35 now, and, 2026 World Cup's coming. There's going to be renovations. Might as well add 5 to 10,000. So there's going to be things like this. It's going to be the same in Vancouver, too. Well, no, Vancouver's not hosting games. So it's not going to be the same in Vancouver, but maybe Canadian Premier League Stadium will get an upgrade for 2026, too. But those are all speculation at this point, and will happen
after
2026.
Only 10 games to share, too. So, it's, you know, they're going to have to... I think, folks, that probably the majority of these games, they're probably split them between two or, well, there's really just three venues that
two,
I think realistically will host against.
I think two.
Edmonton.
And Edmonton will get a couple.
I think Montreal, Toronto are going to split the games.
That's what I was going
to
say.
Ultimately, when it comes down to it, it'll just be a West. It'll just be two teams in the East because I just think that Edmonton's too far geographically for the rest of it. We'll see how that plays out. I'm not saying I don't want Edmonton to get games. I'm just thinking realistically, I think it's likely that they might split them between the two biggest cities in the country. Had Vancouver applied, I think there's no doubt that they would have probably went east-west and split them down the middle.
Yeah, but they did not, so there's that. But speaking of the future and everything, 2026 is coming, but it's still 7 years away. This summer, we do have a tournament. Might not be in Canada. Might be in the U.S. and Mexico. But the Gold Cup is happening this year, and it's an important Gold Cup for Canada, Dwayne, because it is the Gold Cup before the League of Nations starts this fall. It's the Gold Cup with a new generation and a few of the old generation still there. It's the first Gold Cup under John Herdman. It's John Herdman's first tournament in charge of the Canada men's national team, and there's a bunch of young, exciting rookies or young players making their debut in the World Cup this summer for Canada. It's an exciting times.
Yeah, and quickly before we get into this in depth, if you're looking for Canadian Women's Talk, you know, and you're about to yell at the device that we were ignoring them with the World Cup upcoming, we did a whole show on the women last week. You can find that in the archives. I think you nailed it with the John Herdman's first cup. This is John Herdman's first true test. Obviously, he steered the team through, you know, a few friendlies and the qualification stage of the Nations League last year without a hitch, without a hiccup, but that's just it. It would have been a hitch or a hiccup had something gone wrong in those games. They were the favorite in all of them. Perhaps maybe the New Zealand friendly, you could argue, but I still think that they were kind of a favorite in that. So they've done what they're supposed to do so far, and now the real test begins, starting with the Gold Cup. And you know, everyone from outside of Canada has pointed to this team as having potential, of having a lot of nice young stars. There is no one on unattached FC right now currently. That's good. That's a new thing. So that's something to look at for there. But proof's in the pudding, right? And we've talked about how talent there was on the Canadian roster before. You know, I think of the 2010 cycle and how much excitement there was around that, and we all saw that fizzle into nothingness, ultimately ending with the 8-1 loss in the next cycle after that. So it's really about what they do this summer. And John Herdman, as I said, you know, now the pressure starts. He hasn't had any pressure before. Really, I don't think there was a whole lot of pressure on the women's side of things. Perhaps you could argue, you know, at the 2015 World Cup that there might have been, but they had that bronze medal to lean back on, and lean back on it they did. No one was calling for his head. He could have sat in that job forever. So here he is. This is what you asked for, John. This is what you got the race for. So got to prove it now.
Yep, and here's our 23-man roster. Both Dwayne and I did our own 23-man roster, and we have it in front of us. There's probably going to be some similar choices. Probably going to be a few choices we need to justify to each other. But here we start, Dwayne. Let's do the way a good football team does in today's world. Let's start from the back. Let's play from the back, Dwayne. Let's play from the goalkeepers. Three goalkeepers I chose for the 2019 Canada Men's National Team Gold Cup roster. Maxim Kripo, Milan Borjan, and Marco Busti. Not a lot of surprises, but you don't use a tournament in net to test goalkeepers. You go with what you know, and those are those three.
Yeah, I mean, Busti is the one I guess you could debate, but we're talking about third keeper here, so let's not get too deep into the weeds. I have had questions about him after seeing him on the under-20 tournament, but nonetheless, I think it's key half day. If you do believe that he is in your rotation, but I think Borjan, I think he's been in the fold for so long that a lot of people assume he's older than he is, when the reality is he's only 31, so there's no reason to get too excitable about finding the replacement for him at this point, because I do think that that he has another, like, not just this cycle, but he's got a full other cycle likely in him, and he's playing at a decent level, particularly when you look at the overall keeping core. So there's no reason really to move on from him as the number one. You want to have an established number two, particularly domestically for Nations League games, things like that. You don't want to be constantly calling him over the sea from his club commitments. Kripo is that guy, I think, clearly.
Yeah.
And I suspect that we might look, you know, in the near, very near future in the Canadian Premier League for backups for Kripo.
And Ingham.
Look at Ingham.
Ingham for York 9 has been maybe the best goalkeeper in the league so far. I had the chance to see him play up close against Blainville last week, and I had a chance to talk to him a bit after the game, and I have to say, he might not be tall enough to be one of those keepers that's like penned in like a Kripo or Borjan, but his play, his positioning has been really good, and Ingham has been one of the best goalkeepers in the Canadian Premier League so far for York 9, so you're right, eventually Ingham's going to be in that conversation, at least for top five goalkeepers in the country.
Oh, yeah, and I always said that one of the positional areas that would really benefit the most from the Canadian Premier League was keeping. It's difficult to break in internationally as a keeper. You know, there's only three opportunities where you can be a domestic in the entire world, and, you know, it's a limited spot. So there is not a lot of keeping depth in this country right now. If you look at that list, you know, you're talking about an under-20 Juve player as your third best option right now, and I think that says a little bit about the overall depth. But the Canadian Premier League will really improve that and help that in the very near future. There's a good chance that when you're looking at the first CanPL call up, it will be, you know, in that third keeping position, perhaps,
or
like
defender.
A defender in there too. Yeah,
like a defender, like seventh. That's a seventh center back or something. All right. Did you have any different choices for your goalkeepers?
No, not really. Those would be the exact three that I would use as well. Good to look at guys like Thomas to see, you know, what he might be able to do in a camp type setting. So I like they called it a bunch of different looks here, but I do think that the three that you mentioned are the three that are likely to be on that final roster.
Let's move on to the center back position of the defense. I did choose five names. Some of them are, because of course, midfield and strikers. Some of the strikers on the list for Canada are more midfielders, so I did choose six strikers, but I think two or three of them will be played as midfielders anyways. I've only chosen six midfielders, so you can understand there why. But in my defender, center back, I do have five guys there, because you do need, in my opinion, two full pairing and a backup, because you never know what's going to happen, injuries or players or changing of formation, which is going to be the case maybe for Herdman, depending on who they're playing, depending on which group stage game. So for me, my center back position, Dwayne, I have five. Derek Cornelius, David Edgar, the return of Andre Eno, Daniel Henry, and Dejan Jakovic as center back for the Gold Cup in my roster for this summer.
Yeah, that's not a bad shift. The only question I would have would be Edgar in terms of his overall health and sort of fit right now, whether or not the world may have moved on from him. That is a question to me for sure. I think Daniel Henry has proven this year for the Whitecaps that he can be a solid guy that you can lean on a little bit. I know that he frightens a lot of people because of some past errors that he has made. Certainly those are with merit that you can look at some of those errors, but But really, when you look at what you have there, and I'm just sort of going through the list here to make sure that I'm not missing anyone that, might jump out. A lot of these guys, when you look at the overall list, a lot of these guys are fullbacks that he's brought up, which sort of suggests to you how Herdman wants to play this. Yeah, so
exactly. That's why I got five, because I wouldn't be surprised to see a 3-5-2 or something for John Herdman at some point, and three of those five at center back, and two of those upcoming three names as fullback. And for me, Dwayne, one of the big breakthrough for Canada, I would say, is Zachary Broguiar. I have a chance to see him up close almost every week here in Montreal, an Academy of Olympique Lyon's Academy project, and Canadian, of course, and Zachary Broguiar on a fullback, on a flank, the amount of pace, intelligence, his crosses are pinpoint accurate. That's going to be amazing, and I'm excited to see Zachary play this summer for Canada. And my two other names, Marcos Godino and Ashton Morgan. Of course, Godino won't be the name you know most here, but he does play in Scotland for Heart of Midlothian FC, and Marcos Godino could be a good product, a good fullback going forward as a youngster, just like Zachary Broguiar, and Ashton Morgan to bring some sort of veteran presence as a fullback. For me, this will be my defensive pairing. Cornelius Edgar, Andre Hinault, Daniel Henry, Yakovic, Zachary Broguiar, Marcos Godino, and Ashton Morgan.
Okay. Did you put James in at center back? I forget whether
nope,
you
I did
had
not.
Him there.
No, I did not put.
Okay. That to me is the one where he needs to be on the team. He's been a solid player when he's played. So I will include him in there. But in terms of the fullback position, yeah, Ashton, he's a left back too, and it's just such an area of need. Mark Anthony Kay is going to play at the back as well.
Yeah,
sees him as a fullback. So
I do have him in my midfield because he's considered a midfielder on the list here. So that's why I chose him there. But you're right. He might be used more as a fullback, especially with the pace we see him play in LAFC. You know, funny thing, Dwayne, you mentioned Mark Anthony Kay. Before Mark Anthony Kay was signed by LAFC, he was a USL player, right? And Montreal Impact had him on their discovery list. So he could have been playing for the Impact, but they were not quick enough to sign him after that USL season when it was back up for discussion and LAFC grabbed them with their expansion side. But it could have been. Mark Anthony Kay could have been playing in my backyard, but it's not the case. Let's go to the entirety of the midfield now. For me, here's a midfield of veteran presence, and I think this is where Canada will win games. It's going to be a battle of the midfield, and this midfield could be the second or third best in CONCACAF outside of Mexico and the United States of America. Scott Arfield, Junior Hollette, Atiba Hutchinson, Mark Anthony Kay, Samuel Piet, and Jonathan Osorio are my names in the midfield.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. Liam Miller, you might want to put in there as well.
He's a striker, but I agree.
Well, he's listed as a midfielder in the list, right? There's a lot of players that are mixed up in here, but yeah, that's what I was about to say about him, is that he can kind of play a tweener position. So if Herdman wants to go with that route, he can. Tadla is the question that I have there. You know, do you have him listed as a forward?
I'm
not sure. But,
yeah, because in my list that I have here, right, from Canada Soccer, here are all the strikers they have. Jonathan David, Alfonso Davies, Jackson Amel, Kyle Arvin, Liam Miller, Tassin Ricketts, and Belou Jean-Yves Tabla. So those are just choices for your strikers. A lot of them are more midfielders, and I chose them as strikers for argument's sake here. But no, you're right. I do have Liam Miller and Belou, but we'll get there.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing, too, there's a lot of players, like I say, any national team's going to deal with this, for those that want to complain about it, is that they will look and have to twist and tweak and kind of put players in a position because you have a whole bunch of strength. I mean, look at the sixth position for Canada. Crazy, you got three players you can plug in there, right, that are all playing at top level.
Yeah,
kind
Atiba.
Of spread that out a little bit.
You could put Atiba there, Marc Anthony Kay, or Samuel Piet. They could all be your six. Yeah. They could all be the sentinel in front of the back line.
Yeah, and they might have a double pivot, I think, at the back, probably maybe have a play with the talent that he's got. I think a national team coach has to work with the talent they have rather than push the talent they have into what they want to work with, right? So that's what you might want to do. Mark Anthony Kay has played out wide in areas in his career in the past. TFC played him out wide for all of his development until he left them, because they decided that he wasn't a wide player, and then Louisville started the process of moving him more into a central role. But he for a national team, can do a job out there. You want to get him on the pitch, and he has been playing more offensively before. You know, the players you mentioned are obvious. You know, the debates we're going to have. I mean, does Will Johnson get a look again for a veteran sort of look out there?
I don't know. I say no. Why? Because it's all about the future. It's all about what's coming after.
I'm inclined to agree with you. Cordova, maybe kind of a guy you want to have a good look at anyway. You know, Arfield is obviously the captain of this team right now.
Arfield plays every single minute.
Atiba will be, but I mean, he's the effective captain moving forward for the next cycle. So, look, there's a lot of offensive talent here. You mentioned David. I think he's a winger, or he's more of a midfield wing type player, but nonetheless, he's got to lift it up front. So he's on the team regardless of where we put him. So
exactly.
There you go.
Here's my strikers for my 23-man roster. Lucas Cavallini, Jonathan David, Alfonso Davies, Balu Tabla, Liam Miller, and Kyle Lahren. I debated to put Kyle Lahren and Balu Tabla. Both are not seeing a lot of first-team minutes with their team in the last half of the season that just finished, but I think it's a chance to have chemistry, to have a community created around this team, and you want players that you think are going to be influential in the future to be part of this now so they can create the rapport between each other, the chemistry, the camaraderie together. I think it's important. So those are my striker, Dwayne. Lucas Cavallini, my starting striker in every single game, with Jonathan David. If it's a 4-3-3, which we have seen from Herdman before, I would see Cavallini there with Jonathan David to his left and Alfonso Davies to his right, and Balu, Liam Miller, and Kyle Lahren as substitutes, or you make him play in the second game in the group stage with some sort of squad rotation. But those are my strikers. Some of them are going to be used as midfielders. Some of them are going to be used as strikers. But this is my team for the 2019 Gold Cup. And with this team, heck, I'm not fearing anyone outside of Mexico or the United States. Anything is possible.
Yeah, look, you're writing in 10 right now, Cavallini, David, Davis, all that, right? Like, there's no question about those players. They're going to be on the roster, and they are going to be major, massive pieces for this team for, you know, in Davies and David for years and years and years to come. Cavallini has a few years left in him, too, and I love Cavallini's game. He was my player of the year vote last year. I do think that he is an absolute key component of this. The question I have, and here's the debate to be had, is who is the fifth? Is Kyle Lahren still in the mix? And that's a legit question, a legit debate to have right now. He's not really been excelling in the speakers. He needs to get another second chance. I mean, we all had high hopes when he went over there. It has not worked out, clearly. He got paid, so it worked out for him. But
his bank account is happy, but his statistics and his progression of his game, we don't know because we don't see him play. He barely plays.
Yeah, and when I look at this, if he is truly going to be your second, you know, second or third choice for that frontal line kind of role, I almost want to bring Ricketts instead, because Ricketts is a veteran guy that's going to be okay with playing 5-10 minutes off the bench. I'm not sure Lahren is going to be okay with that or effective in that role.
I always forget about thinking about the camp life, the harmony of it all. And, you know, we've seen Lahren pout before. We've seen Lahren not be happy before. Did I ever see Tyson Ricketts not smiling? I can't remember. Because he smiles all the time. And he's scoring goals like there's no tomorrow right now. Where is he? Is he in Scandinavia? I think he is somewhere.
Lithuania,
okay. And by the way, did you know that Tyson Ricketts in Lithuania is Tyson Sass Ricketts? Yeah, there's a different spelling, I guess. And it's the same Sass, Ricketts Sass, with the game winner over the last, four games. He scored 6 goals or something in Lithuania. But anyways, I didn't put Ricketts there because I'm thinking more about the future and I would rather have experience. Even if the players are not going to play a lot, I'd rather have young players have experience of a continental tournament heading into the next phase of the development of this national team. But you're right. If you don't trust Kyle Lahren, might as well bring Ricketts. Might as well bring someone who's going to give you a good presence in the locker room, you know, that famous intangible, or give you a goal here and there with five minutes to play and be that super sub that does tire out the defenses. That could be that too. Yeah, it's true. I didn't think about it because I was, in my mind, I'm thinking maybe a bit younger, and I'm thinking about maybe analyzing this way too much. Maybe just bring the people that are in form right now. And I guess would have been a choice.
What's the goal of this tournament? I mean, there's
it's to win. You're right. It's to win.
Yeah, it's Continental Championship. I mean, do you go with it? You know, there are arguments to be made, and certainly the U.S. and Mexico will use the Gold Cup this way because of their relative standing in the region. But I think if you're Canada and you've had such a long stretch of nothingness, you have this new league starting, you have, you know, the World Cup games in 2026, as we said off the top coming here, that you need, I think, at this point to make a marker down to say that, no, we're not a patsy anymore. We're not going to sit down and lie over and have you rub our tummy any longer. So you need to put your best team forward. And right now, is to St. Ricketts a better option than Kyle Lauren as a fifth striking option?
Yeah.
These are the types, and maybe sure. He is. I can argue for Lauren too, but because, you know, I think the talent is there, and obviously he has a, you know, much longer shelf life in terms of what his overall impact to the Canadian national team is going to be moving forward. But you know, if you're going to go young, you can also put Mark Anthony, or sorry, AJH in there as well, right?
True.
You want to just get some experience stuff up there, but I wouldn't necessarily make that argument very strongly. Make it if you want. But
you can. I won't. Somebody can. But right now, yeah. I think AGH is like seventh in the depth charts of strikers right now. I think he's behind a Laren and behind a Ricketts. But who knows? It all depends, too. They're different type of strikers. Do you want more of a hold-up big body man that could give you a few headers off corners against smaller team in this tournament? Sure. And AGH could be that too. It all depends what is the plan, and we're not in John Herdsman's mind. Good thing.
Yeah,
I believe. I don't want to be in his mind. You know, Don Malkovich, I've seen that movie.
And tiny little tight white t-shirts that we had those. No.
No, exactly. Like no. I don't want to be there. It's
weird. Mediums. Anyway.
So, for me, it will depend. But this is the roster I believe Canada's going to have the best chance of success with heading into the Gold Cup. And I think we're in for a fun summer, a really fun summer of supporting Canada with France 2019. Dwayne will be there. And with the Gold Cup as well. It's going to be a summer of soccer. A summer of soccer. Soccer,
yeah,
in the city.
I'll be there for the group stage. So I'll be back with Voyageurs watching the knockout rounds of the Gold Cup for sure. And you know, we have your wedding to worry about there too. But if there's any pennies left over and Canada somehow makes the final, I'll probably walk there. So there you go.
Sideways.
It's going to be a fun summer. What's your expectation on the Gold Cup? I guess maybe we'll have a Gold Cup preview closer. But just in general, what's your expectation for Canada for the Gold Cup?
Well, you're going to show some progression, right? Well, what did we do last time? Quarters? We went to the quarterfinals?
Quarters, yeah.
Semifinal. Semifinal is my successful threshold, because if you look at the team 2 years ago with the Gold Cup, where Alfonso Davies got his golden boot with 5 goals in the whole tournament, we need to do better from that. So am I expecting 6 goals from Davies? No, because people know about him, and wasn't the case 2 years ago. But my expectations are you need to show progression. And we're going to play in the Nations League, the Group A, this fall with teams like Mexico, Cuba, United States. Big, big, big fish in our CONCACAF pond. So for me, might as well, if you want to be one of the big, big fish in the pond, you got to act like it, and you got to give yourselves the expectations and the ambition that goes with being a big fish in this pond. And you have to be top 4 in this. Like, how good would it be for Canada to finish semifinal or better in the Gold Cup? Mentally, it gives the players in a confidence that, yeah, we are maybe a top 4 team in this region. Which means we can qualify for the World Cup. I think finishing in the semifinal or better in this year's Gold Cup will give Canada the boost of confidence they might need to not play with a certain amount of inferiority complex when it comes to goal to World Cup qualifying against a Honduras, against a Panama, and against a Costa Rica. If you finish top four, be like, heck, we're as good as those are. Might as well beat them. Yeah. Why not? Might as well win.
It's been 11 years since Canada's been past the quarterfinal of the Gold Cup. It's been too long with there, and we all remember how that game ended. It's my expectation.
Atiba was onside. Atiba was onside.
He's still playing too, so maybe he has a chance to bookend his Gold Cup career with an onside goal, a correctly called onside goal. Anyway, moving past that, my expectations. You did sort of a literal. I'll do a little bit more of a big picture expectation. I would really like to see Canada perform to the level it's supposed to against weaker opposition. One of its greatest weaknesses over the course of its Gold Cup history, and CONCACAF history for that matter, has been playing down to opponents. That they will go and get themselves geared up and will take points off Costa Rica, not so much off the USA and Mexico, but they played Mexico pretty tough over the years, to be quite blunt, especially in Canada. So they've raised the game up with everyone but the US over the course of the last few decades, but have managed to, you know, every time they seem to get a good result at a Gold Cup, they lose to, you know, Guadalupe or something. Guadalupe, there's no way. They lose to Martinique or
win against
whoever.
Dominica 1-0. I was there in that game. That was something else.
So they need, to me, if Canada can just knock those minnows aside and focus on those bigger games, and if they, you know, if they get to a quarterfinal and by happenstance they draw Costa Rica, the United States, Mexico in that quarterfinal, that first off means they likely finish second in the group. So putting that aside, but if they do finish second in the group, or they get a bad bounce and one of those top teams finishes second in their group and Canada ends up drawing them and they lose a quarterfinal despite playing well, beating the teams they were supposed to beat easily, you know, playing competitively in the game when they lost in that quarterfinal, then I'm not going to be overly upset by it, but I would be equally as frustrated if Canada were to find their way in a semifinal, but play kind of like get a draw against the minnow or kind of scramble to get there. It's but the process to me at this point for them, because World Cup qualifying is so much more important and it is so close to us right now. And this has to be a building block for that. But in terms of what you're saying, yeah, quarterfinals is an absolute reasonable expectation for Canada to have going into this. They should be not expecting to make them, but hoping realistically to make them. And I think as fans, we can do that as well. And if you make the semifinals at that point, then what the hell, right? Like, you play those games and see what happens.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm getting excited. You know, it's a big summer for me personally. It's a big summer for Canada soccer. It's a big summer for a lot of reasons. And one of the reasons why is Canadian Premier League and MLS will continue to play games. And there's going to be games this weekend, Dwayne. And let's take a look at what games we have tonight in Major League Soccer. It's going to be a fun night because I have my Montreal Impact playing the late Friday night game. I'm going to be up late with my friend David watching the Montreal Impact play LAFC at 10:30 p.m. But before that, 7 p.m. Orlando versus LA Galaxy. Real Salt Lake versus Atlanta United. LAFC Montreal tonight. Three games on a busy Friday night.
Yeah, the LA and Montreal game will be, you know, very interesting.
Nope yet.
For a lot of reasons. yeah, it's going to be a tough one for the Impact. Let's be honest here on the road and against the team that looks like a juggernaut within MLS context right now. But it's always good to measure yourself. And if you're the Impact, which have been a bit Jekyll and Hyde this year, I think having the opportunity to step up and play against the top team in the league should be something they're relishing. And I wouldn't be shocked if the Impact
Montreal gets
there
a point.
Put a solid, get a solid performance on this one. Whether they can score against them is going to be the question. But it'll be fun to watch. And it's been a long week. So it's been a short week, but a long week. You know how that works? Because it's a short week because we had a holiday on Monday. You have to do more work to do. Why do they even give us holidays anyway?
I don't have them. So Chicago NYCFC, Vancouver FC Dallas, New England DC United, Philly Portland, FC Cincinnati, the Red Bulls, Minnesota, Houston, and the last game Saturday is Colorado, Columbus in Major League Soccer. Sunday, two games, Sporting Kansas City versus Toronto FC. Those games are Sunday, May 26th. Now, in the Canadian Premier League this weekend, we do have two games on Saturday, Dwayne. York 9 FC looking for their first win and their first regular season game at York Lions Stadium. By the way, York Lions Stadium, if you're wondering why is it that small, it's as small at NYCFC right now. It's the smallest field allowed by FIFA for a men's first, like, men Premier League game. So, yes, York Lions Stadium is not big. The field is small. It's similar size to Yankee Stadium, if you follow Major League Soccer. But it's going to be the only year this stadium is like this. Next year, because they're going to play a couple years at York Lions Stadium for York 9. Next year, they're going to remove part of the track and field track around the soccer field to be able to have a bit of bigger of a playing surface. But for now, it is very small. And York 9 will play their second game there, their first regular season game, versus Hamilton, versus Forge FC, the 905 Derby. And York 9 looking for their first win in the Canadian Premier League.
Yeah, and hopefully a bit better crowd than they had midweek for the Oilers Cup game, which was nobody. It was
what's Bad Boys? Who can beat Mel Lastman's Bad Boy? Nobody.
Oh my God. Yeah, you see them. Why do we elect buffoons as mayors in this city? Anyway, it's a question to ask myself and my neighbors, I guess. It's why? Here's what I'll say about the attendance that York had. First off, midweek game, all of the inherent problems with that, a cup competition game, all of those are a factor. And I knew it was a problem because I was getting emails, like after email, from York and the league in the lead up to it, trying to people out to it. You know, it's a problem when there's email floods coming at you.
Please don't forget about us. We have tickets. Tickets are available for this game. Come on, come support us. Come support us. Yeah.
It's always was going to be a tough sell because
It's been since day one. York 9 has been an issue since day one.
Look, we could do a full show on this. We could. Maybe we will if this continues to be a problem moving forward. York as a market is very, like, even the name, it's inherent in the name. They're trying to get like 9 very different communities that are over a very large geographical area to unite behind this single team, which is playing in the very bottom corner of the region.
Which is playing not in the region, so, to be fair.
Yeah, so it's in Toronto right now. Yeah,
it's next to the Rock.
But yeah.
It's literally next to the Royal Ontario Museum. It's literally in York. I was there a month ago next to that field. I was like, is it here? They're really going to play here?
York University. You're thinking of varsity. But,
true. Sorry.
Yeah, it's UT Stadium. But don't mix UT and York up. Different places.
I know, right? Yeah, sorry about that. Sorry.
Yeah, it's not a region that has a particular singular identity, right, is what I'm saying. So there's no one to really grab on there. For those midweek games, apparently they're doing okay. I have talked to people in the league office that think that they're going to have a decent crowd out Saturday. It is up to them to put a good game day experience on so more of them come back. It's going to be that. But the reason we're talking about York and the attendance in the way that we are, we're not trying to bash the league. Clearly, we are advocates of the league to be successful, but we can't ignore the warts. Is because it was back-to-back. It was such a juxtaposition. That Halifax game on, midweek playing a semi-pro team, and there's like 4,000 people in Halifax.
Yep.
And then they immediately jump to that, and it's like, whoa.
I know. I was surprised. We have to say Halifax. You know, it's a good thing when your name is from away, and it's always, we're coming from far. We're going from away. Thank God for away goals.
that's, we didn't break that game down, but I didn't quite know. I was very ambivalent watching that because obviously anyone who knows me knows that I'm a big advocate for League One Ontario and worked for the league for a while, and I'm friends with Dino, who's been on the show many, many times.
Yeah.
But at the same time, as a Canadian Premier League advocate, I'm like, oh God, they're losing the game. This is not good for reputation.
Did you see the IS Blainville game too last Wednesday versus York 9?
Yeah, no, I watched them both, yeah.
Blainville, first of all, their kit was beautiful. Like, for a semi-pro team, has a nicer kit than some MLS teams. That was fun. But IS Blainville played amazingly, too. And it does. Yeah. Level of the top teams in League One Ontario and PLSQ could play in the Canadian Premier League right now. Like, you put the exact roster of Blainville in the Premier League, they're not even last.
Well, in a couple of years, maybe not literally as the representation of that same club, but like the vast majority of both of those rosters will be in the Premier League at one point.
Like Montreal, like, and Montreal and Quebec City are going to raid Blainville. Like the coach is going to come coach higher, and the players that do have ambitions at this level, like Mohamed Farsi and others, will be playing in the Canadian Premier League before long.
Yeah, and it wouldn't shock me if they're playing in July, some of them.
Literally.
There's going to be injuries, or reinforcements are going to be needed on some of these rosters after the spring season. And I suspect that a lot of these coaches, well, apparently Julie de Guzman was all over the place to be seen up at York University as well for the Ottawa Fury, which are playing at a similar level, as we well know. So
fun story.
People are looking at those players.
I have a fun story for you. Listeners of the show sent us many messages of the presence of Julian de Guzman at York Lang Stadium, so much so that the president of the Canadian Premier League, Paul Byrne, was present at the game too, and he contacted listeners of the show that posted on social media, "We have seen Julian de Guzman." Like, where have you seen him? I need to go talk to him. And apparently there was a lot of people seeing Paul Byrne and Julian de Guzman talk together. Rumors are starting. I don't know, but it's an interesting, maybe, mending of the fences.
Well, that might actually be the first contact the two sides have had in about 4 months. I mean, everyone asks me about this all the time, and I've updated it on Twitter. They aren't talking.
Well, maybe they are now.
Yeah, if that's what it takes, then great, because what I've heard and what I've repeated is that basically the Canadian Premier League is looking at other ownership groups now, which, you know, I don't think anyone wants soccer wars in the capital. I don't think it works. It's like OKC again or Chattanooga, or there's like any, we all make fun of it in the States. So like, we don't want to see it here.
No, we don't. And the other game this weekend in the Canadian Premier League, Cavalry FC, best team in the country, not playing in Major League Soccer, versus HFX Wanderers at Spruce Meadows. You were talking about attendances, and I don't want to name, like, mention numbers and stuff, but Cavalry looks good. It's easy when you win, too. Cavalry might go undefeated in the entire spring season. Heck, they might go undefeated in the entire season. We'll see. But it is impressive, and I have to say, we've talked about this before, but when you have a game, let's forget about that York 9 game in Ice Playville in the middle of those two, but you had the HFX Wanderers game, and then you had the second leg in Spruce Meadows. That was fun to watch. It was beautiful. I love the sight lines and the look of Cavalry, Dwayne. I have to say, it reminds me of, like, community parks in England. It reminds me of League One or Championship stadiums. It reminds me of, like, Loftus Road, or maybe Loftus Road is a bit bigger, but it does have a feeling like this. And I have to say, it's fun to watch. It's different. It really goes well on TV. Like, it does show its beauty. And the green is quite green, I have to say. Please, greenkeeper of Cavalry, contact the one of the Montreal Impact ASAP.
Yeah, well, I mean, all of these stadiums were designed with an eye to, you know, scalability, right? That they work for right now, and they have the opportunity to grow with the club and grow with the product. And that's important too. You know, I think that if we're still looking at these tiny little stadiums in 15 years, Kevin and I are still podcasting together in 15 years. I hope our Patreon numbers are much higher. That's the Sports Podcasting Network on patreon.com. Nonetheless, if we're looking at the same stadiums, then you know, there's been stagnant in the growth of the league, and that's not ideal. But no one, at the same time, as we said many times, the strength of this league is understanding where it is and what it is. So having scalability, having these stadiums that work right now and are able to expand with the league, that's important. And look, the other important thing with this league, and that, you know, it's going to happen naturally way down the road when they do implement ProRel, and I do believe that they're sincere when they say they want to work towards that plan. The league has to be flexible in terms of what's not working too. And I'm not saying that York's not working right now, but if 5 years down the line we're still looking at crowds like that, then it isn't. And a decision will need to be made. And that's the reality of the startup league too. MLS did it. They're doing just fine now. So if in fact we have teams that are struggling in a couple of years that move on, that's not the end of the world. It's not what we're hoping for, but let's remember that we have to be a little bit flexible in what our expectations are in the first few years of this league.
Yep, I agree. And it's a fun time for Canadian soccer. And I hope that we're able to share our enthusiasm about the beautiful game in this beautiful country with everyone listening to us on a daily and weekly basis. We do appreciate your time, your support, and your contributions to the success of this show at patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. It is because of your contribution and your support that we can continue to do this 5 years in the making. As always, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute and myself at Kev Laramie. We'll be back Monday with another edition of Soccer Today, the world of football with a soccer perspective. We'll break down the weekend and talk about what's going on in this beautiful world of the beautiful game. But as always, you can find the podcast version anywhere you get your podcasts. You can subscribe on YouTube. Make sure you follow us on Twitter for the live video shows. And if you want to help the coverage of independent soccer media in Canada, make sure you go to patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. Help us cover more of the beautiful game independently in this country. But as always, until next time, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie. It's now time to partay for this weekend. Until Monday, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.